she lost the baby. And I was devastated. I felt numb. I felt like somebody had pulled the rug out from me. And I couldn't make sense of it all. First, I was very upset because I was like, Lord, I'll do anything you wanted me to do. And I always do. And I err on the side of caution that I'd rather do it than not do it. How could you let this happen to me? So first, I had to kind of reconcile that. Then I had to reconcile, like, wait a minute. These people said this and this and this, and it's not true. So then I got confused, hurt, frustrated, and finally I said, you know what? I don't know what to make of this, but all I know is something is severely wrong.
Welcome to Along the Way. I'm John Matarazza, your host and fellow traveler. Thank you for joining me along my way as I try to become more like Jesus every day. The goal of Along the Way is to identify the moments in life that Jesus really is walking with us and trying to get our attention. But, just like the disciples along the way to Emmaus, we are missing those moments that our hearts are burning within us. I want us to be able to identify those moments, learn from others, and apply those lessons to our lives so that we don't miss the blessings that God has for us along the way in our life journey. I have been looking forward to recording this interview and sharing it with you for quite a while. My guest today is Hubie Sin. He is known as the Wandering Prophet. God uses him in a very unique way, and he has powerful words for people from the Lord. I've experienced this myself a number of times, and I've seen him operate in that gift in amazing ways. He's written two books, Tales of a Wandering Prophet and Lessons from a Wandering Prophet, both published by Charisma. I've had the opportunity to work with him both as a guest on my TV show and with my new company, Charisma. We've also developed a friendship and tried to make our schedules work to keep in touch. You're going to enjoy this conversation. I'll get to our conversation in just a moment, but as always, I want to thank you for listening to Along the Way. I hope that you like what you hear and that you subscribe. Please rate and review Along the Way on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. All of my contact information is in the show notes, and you can check out all of my episodes, and please join my email list through my website, alongtheway.media. I would love to hear from you. Also, I have a Patreon page if you'd like to help me to continue to put out these Along the Way episodes. If you'd like to become a Patreon supporter, simply go to patreon.com/alongtheway and select a level. The link to become a supporter is also in my show notes. And now, here's my Along the Way conversation with Hubie Sin. Well, Hubie Sin, it is great to have you on Along the Way, finally. We've been friends for several years now, just because of how God has brought us together along the way. And as you've wandered onto my path we've just come along in life. Hubie was a guest on the Real Life television program several years ago, and God used him in a miraculous way. And we'll talk about that in this episode. And just a good friendship has come from that. And now even in Charisma, where I work now, he's actually one of the authors for Charisma and has come through twice now since I've been here to talk about different things. But the most recent one was talking about his book, Lessons from a Wandering Prophet. I'm grateful to be able to glean from you, Hubie, and to be able to really be friends with you and to just have a great conversation today that other people get to have the privilege of just listening and hopefully enjoying and hearing God through our conversation here. So, Hubie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Great to be here. And I'm glad we finally got to be able to do this. So it's going to be fun. And thank you for having me. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. It is a pleasure. So, Hubie, you've written two books, Tales of a Wandering Prophet and Lessons from a Wandering Prophet. But I got to know, what is a wandering prophet? Let's kind of start there and then work our way backwards to your story. So, what is a wandering prophet?
Okay, well, a wandering prophet is somebody who really doesn't know what he's doing. And he's just, I guess, for lack of a better word, stumbling around and just waiting for God to kind of point him in the right direction. That's kind of the way that it was. It was actually coined by a man named Jim Baker. One time I was on his show with Jonathan Kahn, and he called me the reluctant prophet because we were discussing, I guess, how my gift works and stuff like that. And then he saw me at the end. He goes, "Do what you do." Jonathan was signing books, and I went through the audience. And so then he started calling me the wandering prophet, and it kind of stuck. So that's how I got.
I like
so
that.
That's how I got. So that's really how it started.
That's pretty good. So you just mentioned a couple names there. Jim Baker and Rabbi Jonathan Kahn. I mean, Jonathan Kahn is known best for The Harbinger and the subsequent books from that. How did you get connected with him?
I actually met Jonathan, way back in the early days of my early walk. I used to listen to a radio program that my wife found. It was called The Two Nice Jewish Boys. So I used to listen to this radio program. Mainly it was just to get, I used to have people that would come knock on my door and give me flyers and stuff like that. And at the time, I really wasn't into the, quote, Christian walk. So they would come and I would kind of combat them with scripture, but I would listen to, you know, Jonathan and I don't remember the other person's name, and they would have people call up all the time and they would try to get them saved. So I would listen to the replies and stuff like that. So I knew of him, but I didn't know who he was, what he looked like or anything. And then I was flying to Dallas and the Lord kind of set up a divine connection for us in Charlotte that we had an exchange, and that kind of moved him into his destiny and what God had for him. And it kind of dragged me along with it. So that was a very divine, monumental meeting for both of us. But who would have known it at the time?
Right. Yeah, so that, really. So tell me about that meeting, because this is going to kind of set up how God uses you in your prophetic gift. So tell me about this, how you guys actually met, and what God was doing inside of you to let you know that you needed to to go up to this man.
Well, my flight was supposed to leave on a Friday, but due to a nor'easter storm, my flight kept getting delayed, and then finally they canceled my flight and they moved it to Saturday. So being that I was a day late to go see my sister, who wasn't doing well at that time, she was sick, I booked the first flight. I flew into Charlotte. I'm stumbling around half asleep, you know, because it's an early flight. And I'm looking around to sit down, and there was only one seat, and it was next to the windows. So I went to sit down next to the window, and there was kind of like a broken chair between us. It's kind of like there was a place for a chair, but there really wasn't a chair there, type of thing. So then I'm sitting down having my coffee, trying to stay awake, and then I just kind of feel this impression that I need to look over. It's the Lord telling me I need to look over at the person next to me. So I do. And I see a rabbi. So, you know, I started to have this conversation with God about, well, you know, the Lord's telling me I need to speak to him. And I'm just like, I don't understand. I'm trying to, make sense of it all. Although you can't make sense with God. I was trying to. And then it was kind of like that. And then all this time, my stomach starts to rumble. That's my sign that I need to speak to somebody. You know, and I'm the most conservative person you'll probably ever meet, or negative as accountants. You know, we're very conservative. It's a fancy word for negative. So, you know, I count up all the costs of, you know, this doesn't make sense or whatever it is. So, but I finally just said, you know what, Lord, I'd rather try and then make a mistake than not try. So, you know, the stomach calmed down. I turned to Jonathan and I go, what's the good word? And we started up a conversation. And then the Lord gave him a word, and it was about the book that he had written, which was The Harbinger at that time, which was the manuscript, because everybody knew him as a radio personality. They didn't know him as an author. He had never written a book before. And that turned into The Harbinger coming out, because I was associated with Charisma because of the David Tyree Super Bowl catch. I had met some people at Charisma when they went to find out the story of the David Tyree catch. That, you know, he said it all really started with my accountant. So that kind of, you know, I met somebody named Woodley, who's become a friend of mine, and he came and interviewed me, because he was like, I still can't believe this all started with an accountant. So so I knew Charisma through there, and I just connected the two after praying about it. And then The Harbinger just took off as soon as it came out.
And And The Harbinger went on to become a New York Times bestseller. I mean, it's a big book. And his other books have become New York Times bestsellers as well.
Right.
Do you remember anything about the word that you gave him? Like, what was it that God used you to tell him?
part of the word I remember was about a book that he had written, that God had given him, which I had no idea that he had written a book. It was about the book would go all across, I guess, all across the globe or something. And it would be God directing it. And something about God was going to kind of connect him to everything. The Lord told him about, I guess, some other things that were going on in his personal life and things like that. And Jonathan's very detailed. So he was just checking them off as they were going along. So it was definitely a divine connection that the Lord put us, divine meeting. Because, I mean, what still amazes me is he wrote The Harbinger already, but when he, you know, there's a chapter in the book when the main character meets, you know, he has a divine meeting with a prophet. The prophet is sitting on his left side. I was sitting on the left side. You know, it was in a public place. We were in an airport. The prophet initiates the conversation, and that's what I did. So literally, the Lord had us. The book was already prophetic, and we actually worked everything out to detail to whatever was written already. So it was a pretty amazing thing.
That's amazing. And that wasn't something that you could have known, because obviously the manuscript wasn't out yet. That was something that he couldn't fabricate or, you know, create, because he would have needed you to not, you know, to know things that you, there was no way that you would have known anyway. So like, that's just really interesting how God works like that. You also mentioned David Tyree. And so for the people that aren't remembering, his name might sound familiar, but it might not. David Tyree is one of the heroes of the Super Bowl between the New York Giants, where they beat the New England Patriots. And he is famous because of a particular catch that he made. And God used him in a lot of ways after that. But how did you get connected with him? Because he said it all came back to his accountant.
Right. I was working. I had quit my job in the finance and the as a CFO for a fashion company, and I became. I started working alongside of a financial person, and that financial person used to have David Tyree as a client. So you know, we met David because we went to have a meeting, and he's like, "Look, I'll handle all your finances, and this guy, Hubie, will do your taxes." And that's kind of how it started. And then, you know, I had to call him one night. I did. And then, you know, there was this big expectation around the Super Bowl that my wife and I had.
Right.
Actually, we've experienced at that time, and we haven't experienced it since. It was kind of like you knew God was going to do something. We didn't know what it was. And there were actually a few other people who were actually watching it, too. And then when he made the catch, a lot of the word actually came true right when he did that. It didn't specifically say he was going to make this catch. It specifically said something about God's going to give him a platform. God's going to make him known as a wide receiver, because he was actually a special teams guy. And he was like, I think, the third listed receiver, I think. So a lot of the things that were specific enough that it all just kind of came true when he caught it. And it gave him a big platform to share Christ, which is really what he wanted to do.
Right. So God used you to encourage him and give him that word that this is, that the dreams of his heart to be, you know, to, for God to use him, you know, to have football as a platform for the gospel. God used you to encourage him that he's in the right place. He's doing the right thing. And,
actually for me,
that's pretty cool.
You know, he got the word in October. So, you know, he was injured. He wasn't even playing. He didn't know when he was going to get back on the field, and the Giants were having a horrible season. So, it looked like that was so far from what reality was.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he got back on the field, the Giants went on a run, and, you know, that's what happened. It was an amazing thing to witness.
For sure. And to have, you know, that firsthand connection there to David. Did you get a chance to talk to him afterwards, like shortly after that?
He actually called me the next morning really early.
Wow.
Because, you know, everybody was probably calling him. He called me really early, and he was just very humbled, and he was just saying, "Can you believe what God did?" And you know, and he said, "I'll talk to you when I get home." And that was pretty much it. But it was just like, even his voice was just shaking, because he was still trying to, I guess, comprehend everything of what happened, because at the time that was the most watched Super Bowl in history. So literally he became a household name overnight. And, yeah. you know, but only God can do stuff like that. So it was just like, it was a miraculous catch. It wasn't like that catch, then they won the game. You know, they still had to score, but that was like the major turning point. And God just made him known throughout. So then everybody knew who he was. And when he talked about, you know, Christ and his walk, then he was able to minister to so many. Like even his marketing agent had told me he was watching it from the hotel room. When he saw David make the catch, he fell on the floor and gave his life to Christ at that time, which was an amazing story because he was kind of borderline. So I was like, wow, that was really something. He goes, because I knew something was going on with that because David had always spoken to him, but then he actually saw it. So
it was
great to hear that and tend to actually speak to his marketing person and him share that testimony with me. It was great.
That's really cool. It's amazing how God works, and he works all things together for good for those who love him and are called according to his purposes. You know, Hubie, I want to kind of go back into your growing up story of how God brought you to where you are today. Because we just talked a little bit about how God's used you in places where he wants you to deliver prophetic words to people. But let's go back to before this even started. Like, I wanted to hear about how you grew up and how you met Jesus, and then how you started realizing that Jesus was speaking through you.
Okay, well, my mom brought us up Catholic. I used to go to Catholic school and all of these things. And so I knew of God. I didn't really know much about him, but I knew of God. And then my mom became born again. So then we started going to a different type of church. It wasn't a mass. My mother used to drag us, you know, because I'm a teenager. Who really wants to go to church when you're a teenager?
Right.
So we used to go to these churches, and I'd see people waving their hands in the air and falling on the floor and stuff like that. We used to go to a church that was, the pastor was Ron Tucker, was his name, which was actually the first, and they used to have speakers come in, kind of like the way they do now. But back then, it was early on. And actually, out of that church, the first person that I actually remember, the first guest, was this woman named Marilyn Hickey. So, you know, she was speaking about something called, I still remember it vividly. It was something, she was talking about the gift of tongues. And she was saying, I still remember the phrase because I'm kind of like a history guy. So she was like, you know, it's not Morse code. It may sound like it, but it's not, you know. So I still remember her saying that. And that's kind of, I saw it going on, but I didn't really know anything about it or, you know, I just knew that I was going there and I was just kind of witnessing it. I didn't really know much about it. Just I had to go on Sundays. Otherwise, my mother would get upset. So that's kind of how it was. But, you know, scripture says train up a child and when they get older. So, you know, just by being in the presence of that, it had dropped enough seeds in me that it wasn't new to me when I started to really look for it for myself, but the seeds were there already, and I was exposed to it already. So, you know, my wife and I, she grew up a Baptist. One day after, you know, we really weren't walking. You know, we had gotten married. We were just going out to eat on Sundays instead of going to church and things like that. We were kind of newlyweds, and then we got into a horrible car accident. I mean, you know, you looked at the car, it was totaled. We should have died. I remember sitting in the ambulance like, yeah, well, we were definitely spared for something.
Yeah.
So we came home, we went to the hospitals and, you know, we were wearing all these braces and things like that. And I had just like, well, God must have a plan for me because I don't really know, but I should have been severely injured. We were injured, but not severely. So then I started looking for a church because I was like, you know what, we were spared and I want to make sure because when you see death fly before your eyes, that kind of, you know, it changes your perspective.
Right.
I was like, okay, well, we need to, you know, I don't want to die and spend eternity in hell. So we need to get to church type of thing. So then we started church searching. You know, I'd go to like all different churches. I went to a Presbyterian. I went to a Methodist. I went any church that I found in the phone book, I would go. Even a Catholic church, you know, and then you filled out your cards because you are a new person. I used to put the wrong information because I didn't want them coming to my house type of thing. So that's the way I was. So, you know, we started to attend a Methodist church for a little while and it was fine. It was more like a sense of community with these people. And then as time went on, my wife and I felt we needed more. So then we started going to a full gospel church. that a friend had, a coworker had invited her to. Mm-hmm. And so we stayed there for 14 years. And we grew up a lot. Wow. I used to go on missionary trips. You know, it was more like a show business type of church. You know, a lot of Broadway people went there. It was very artsy. And then you had the accountant. So I kind of didn't fit in. So I didn't know how to contribute because there wasn't really business people there, at least from what I did. So I joined the kids' church because I didn't know what else to do. I could take care of kids because I'd take care of my siblings growing up. And that was the only spot that I felt that I could contribute at that time. So I was in children's church for a long time, training up the kids, you know, from they were like 2 or 3 years old all the way up to when they were teenagers. So, and that's kind of how my walk started. And then, you know, going on the mission trips taught me a lot. The first couple I went to, I didn't know what to do. So I was an usher. I would count the money, you know, things like that. And then later on, I got thrown into the music ministry just because I happened to buy a guitar. And that's kind of how I started playing. And then, you know, God has a sense of humor. He knows what's inside. I don't. So, and he just threw me into there. And then I did that for a while. And then, you know, God moved us on to another church and we just kept going forward from there. But that's kind of how it all started.
So you said that you had to take care of your siblings. What did you mean by that? Like, are you you're the oldest of how many, or like what did that mean?
I had an older sister. She passed. It was her being sick that was why I was going to visit her in Texas that I met Jonathan. Okay. That was during that time. I had a younger brother who has passed, unfortunately. And then I have a younger sister. So there were four of us.
There was four of you guys.
Now, my mother, she wasn't the most healthy person around. I was, you know, my older sister was doing what she wanted. So a lot of the responsibilities fell on me. So I was helping to feed the baby. I was helping to take care of my brother because the age gap, my brother was born 6 years after me and my sister is 13 years. So, you know, so I was taking care of them because, you know, I couldn't go out and do what I wanted to do because my older sister was somebody needed to help around the house. And that turned out to be me. And I took it as punishment, you know, because you want to go hang out with your friends and you can't. But I didn't realize, you know, looking back that that's really what God had kind of started in me to actually get me along on my walk because I didn't put two and two together because it was done in, I guess, kind of a disguise. It wasn't like, well, this will further your life by learning these skills. I didn't know that. And then when I went to the church, I was able to help in the kids' church because I knew how to take care of them.
Right. So like changing diapers and teaching about, you know, David and Goliath and all that stuff. Like is that what you mean?
Yes. Well, changing diapers was a big one because when I volunteered to go to the kids' church. Now, this is back in the 90s. You know, I walked in there, and of course, there's mostly women. They were all women. And they go, so what do you want to do? You want to... I said, well, I can take care of the babies. And they go, you take care of the babies? I was like, yeah, I can take care of the babies. So then there was a baby there that basically did a bomb that nobody wanted to change the diaper. and they were like, you know, who wants to do who wants? So I was like, I'll do it. And they looked at me, and they go, you know how to change diapers. I was like, yeah, I know how to change diapers. So I went over and I finished. And they were like, wow, you're a guy and you actually know how to do this. I go, yeah, you got it easy. These are the tapes. I used to do it with the pins. There's a big difference. And they were like, how do you know how to do this? So I would just talk to them. And then, you know, we used to race because I did it very quickly and efficiently because I was always doing, I had enough practice. So I would actually race these women and I usually won. So, you know, we just kind of made a joke out of the whole thing. But they were just amazed that a guy was able to do it. And then a guy was able to burp the children, you know, the babies, the infants. And then they stuck me with a lot of the kids that were hard to deal with. Because for some reason, they happened to listen to me more than anybody else. Maybe it's because I was a guy. So, you know, and so that's what I did for many years. And I felt comfortable doing it. You know, I didn't have children at the time, so it was okay. Once I had children and then I had to do it, it was kind of like I'm not getting a break from this.
Yeah. I understand that, or at least that concept. I don't understand that. I haven't been in those shoes, and I'm okay with that at this point. So how long were you in children's ministry there? And then you said that prepared you for what you're doing now? How does that connect?
Okay, well, I was in children's ministry probably over 10 years.
Wow.
A lot of that time was I was supposed to do 3 weeks in the children's ministry and 1 week in the grown-up church. But there were many times, I mean, I can tell you, it happened almost all the time that somebody didn't show up, somebody was, they were short. So they would actually come and pull me out of service to help in the children's ministry, which, I kind of took it as a penalty, like, geez, I can't get into big church. I'm always in the kids' church type of thing. So that happened for a very long time, and I didn't really understand it because I got frustrated. I was like, well, I want to be in big church. I don't always want to be in the small church, but then I have a responsibility. So, and as I went through there, I had to learn to prep for training the children. I had to learn to basically understand them. Mm-hmm. I had to learn how to communicate, which communicating with a child is very different usually than an adult. And you have to talk very simple in simple words. You can't use these big, long professional words like I used to. You have to show them patience because even, they don't talk a lot in straight lines. They talk around in circles and then they get you straight lines. So you got to learn patience. You also got to sit there and just look at them in the eye and let them know that they are the most important thing in the room. Otherwise, they won't basically be open. So a lot of that, it taught me the skills of patience, talking very simple, that way people can understand me, and just letting them know how important the person is at the same time so we would actually sit down and chat. Those skills that I learned there, that's how I do the prophetic ministry that I do.
Okay.
So I didn't realize that that's what God was teaching me back then to do, but that's what I do. When I go to speak to somebody, I sit down with them and we have a conversation kind of like this, and that's the way it is. I can't do it in like a huge group setting. It's not really what I do. And it doesn't matter how many people are there. I'm just going to pay close attention to that one person and let them know that they are the most important thing in my life at that time. And I'm basically putting everything else aside and just concentrating on them. And a lot of times, because I speak in a very simple manner, which I used to take it as kind of like, well, what are you really trying to tell me? Because people would say, you're so simple. And I used to be like, well, what do you think about that type of thing? And then I was like, you know what? It's good that I speak in simple terms because then there is no gray area of what it is that, God wants to tell them through me. It's very clear cut. And, at the beginning, I used to say, do you understand? And everybody say, oh, yeah, I exactly know what you're talking to me. Because when I used to get prophecy, sometimes I would sit there and I guess I would shake my head or scratch it and think maybe they're talking about the person behind me because I didn't understand what is being said to me. So mine is very simple and, I take my time. It doesn't matter because once God is using me, I'm not worried about the time anymore. I'm just concentrating and doing what it is. And, I don't worry about anything else. And that seems to have a dramatic impact on the person who's receiving the word because, number one, they feel very important. They don't feel rushed, and they really understand what is being told to them. It's kind of like a conversation that they are fully understanding what he's trying to tell them, and they fully understand what's going to be coming and things like that. And it's very comforting because a lot of times the words that come through me, they kind of explain your traits. They walk you through certain situations that you've been in the past and things like that. So it gives them something to hold on to for what he's telling them that's coming.
So do you remember the first time that you were used by God to speak and deliver a message to somebody?
Yeah, it was actually in a parking lot that I remember. The early days, they're all kind of clumped together.
Sure.
It was kind of like a parking lot. I didn't really understand what it was. I kind of felt these impressions because I didn't really know what God sounded like or anything else or knew how to recognize it. And I just felt that I needed to go and just talk to the person. Like the person looked familiar, but I didn't know them. And everywhere I looked, it just seemed that my eyes just kept going back to that person. And so me being the conservative, negative person, as an accountant, which I'm trained, I kind of plotted it out. I was like, okay, I'm going to go walk up to the person. I'm going to say what I need to say. And then I am going to run and get out of there. because I'm thinking if it doesn't go well or whatever it is. So it's kind of like I was testing the Lord. Okay, I'm going to do what you want me to do, or I think what you want me to do. And you're a gentleman enough to know that I'm doing it only because I feel you want me to. So don't kind of let me down type of thing. I'm trying to do my part. So yeah. I walked up to the person. I just basically tapped them on the shoulder and I went, oh, by the way, you know, the Lord wants to tell you, blah, 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 blah. And then I just turned and walked away. And the guy was like, hey. And I was like, oh, no, we're good. He's like, how'd you know? I go, I don't know. Goodbye. Thank you very much. And I just kept going. No, that was kind of like it. So that's the first one I remember.
Wow.
And then it didn't come in spurts. It was just like, that was a one-off. And then, you know, a little while later, it would happen again. And a little while later, it would happen again. And then I got concerned because I had some negative issues with prophecy that I've gotten in my own life. So the one thing I never wanted to do was do prophetic stuff. So when I found out that I was actually giving prophecies, I got terrified because I was like, I don't want to hurt anybody. I don't want anybody relying on it. What if it's wrong? There's all these negative things that kind of filter through my brain that I was trying to deal with. And then finally, I was like, well, Lord, I'll do this if this is what you've called me to do, because if you take care of my family, I'll do anything, which was kind of like the deal I set up with him. Okay, sure. You throw me in prophetic, which I don't want to do. Okay, but if you want me to do this, and I'll do it, okay, because I'm not going to go back on my word, but I need to know it's really you. And then a short time after, getting sick started to happen. And it wasn't until that I put the dots together, I was like, oh, okay, that's the signal that I absolutely know it's you.
Right. And so when you say getting sick, you're like sick to your stomach. Is it like butterflies in the stomach or like what?
No.
Could you describe that?
It's kind of like when you eat something bad and your stomach hurts and then it kind of like contracts like this, you know, it kind of contracts and then you don't feel well. And then you actually feel like you're actually going to, your lunch is coming up or dinner, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way it feels. Your neck gets a little stiff. You know, your breathing may be affected because whatever it is in your stomach that's hurting, it's really drawing everything there type of thing. That's the way it is. Mm-hmm. It's really not a pleasant feeling. A lot of times I will, you know, you would think that I would learn, but a lot of times I will drag my heels because I'm like, okay, well, maybe it was, because I do question, maybe it was something I ate. Mm-hmm. I wait sometimes until it gets pretty along the process.
Yeah.
There's been times when I've ministered that I actually have demonstrated to people. And everybody in the room was like, oh my gosh, look at that. And then the point of that is after I show them how I'm getting sick, and then I'm like, okay, my conversation with the Lord goes like this, and I just explain to him. And then when I say, okay, Lord, I'll do it, give me a chance, let me catch my breath, then it just stops. I mean, on demand, it just stops.
Wow.
And then if I linger and kind of mess around, it comes back and it comes back hard. And I was like, okay. So it's kind of like I've given free will to God and he's just dictating what he wants me to do. I'm dragging my heels, but he wants me to kind of get, it's kind of like he's losing patience with me of all things. So it's kind of like, okay, I'll get started type of thing. So, but you know, I've never had a bad one. So that's what's astonishing to Jonathan when we had our conversations was you go through life, you be in public places and you're just happy. And you always seem to hit the right one consecutively over many, many years, rather than, you know, getting somebody who doesn't know or something like that. He goes, it's remarkable. And I'm like, well, once I get sick, then it's fine. And I make sure I get sick every single time. So, you know, it gets hard to serve God, let me tell you, because when you're walking down the street and you're going and you're like, and the Lord points somebody out to you and you're like, the first thing that comes to your mind is, oh, I got to get sick today. You know, it's not something you look forward to, you know, and I don't know this person. So it's kind of like, now it's totally disrupting my life. I'm going to get sick. I'm not going to feel well afterwards. I'm going to feel tired. I'm going to feel drained, but Lord, I'll do it because of you. So it's a sacrifice, you know, but the way God has blessed me, it's worth it. It's just sometimes I'm not in the greatest mood.
Yeah. Have you ever delayed so long that you missed an opportunity that God put in front of you?
I thought I missed one, to be honest. At the beginning, I was learning. And, you know, when you get busy ministering to people, you're kind of just moving around, doing what I do. And then, you know, your friends come by and they say, hey, by the way, we're going to go eat. Or they haven't seen you for a while. So you're chatting with them. Mm-hmm. So I was in Georgia at a conference and I was ministering to some people after the service ended. And then I looked up and I saw a woman and the Lord highlighted her. And I was like, okay, I'll get to it. And then my friends came by and they said hello to me. We're chatting. And I looked up and she was gone. And I went, oh no, mm-hmm. you know, because I take it very seriously. So I go outside. I don't see her. Right. I look outside the doors of the church. I don't see her. I look down the hall. I'm like, oh, and all of a sudden this feeling of disappointment of, you know, God highlighted, I should have told my friends to wait and I didn't do it. And now I blew it. And I don't know the effect of it, but I blew it. And I've learned that when God sets up an appointment, it's not necessarily always for them. A lot of it is, but it's also for you too. So I was like, what did I miss? So I had to self-examine myself all this. And then I'm feeling terrible. You know, my friends go, oh, well, let's go eat. I know this place a couple of miles away. So, you know, I'm not feeling well. I don't feel like eating. I'm upset. And he's like, don't worry, man. Everybody messes up. You know, he's trying to comfort me, but it's not really working because I take it very seriously. And then we pull up to the barbecue place a couple of miles away. You know, and then walk through the doors and the woman is sitting at the table right there and she is just waiting. There's no food on the table. She's just waiting. And my friend laughs and he goes, what's going on? I said, that's the lady from the thing that I was supposed to speak to. He laughs. He goes, I'm going to go order. So he got in line and, you know, they were ordering. So I went and sat down and I was like, you were at the conference. She goes, yeah. I said, okay. And she goes, you know, I've been waiting for you. And I went, oh, she's like, yeah, I've been waiting for you. You know, I thought you had a word for me. And, you know, I saw you were busy. And so I left. And as I was driving home, the Lord told me to come here and wait for you. So I went, oh. So she's like, well, what you got for me? So I told her whatever it was and she was happy. She hugged me, said, thank you very much, walked, left. And I was like, phew. Okay. So, you know, the principle I learned, because I try to learn in principles, kind of like the way I used to teach the kids, is if my heart's right and I really want to do the right thing, God will make sure that it works out one way or another. That's not like I just blew it off and didn't want to do it. I'll do it. So, you know, but it taught me that, you know what, when God has a message for somebody, he'll make sure that it gets delivered.
Right.
So
yeah, he's definitely more faithful than we are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we just need to be available.
Right.
And I was available. It's just, I just didn't do it quick enough type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, I've learned through my life that, and my family knows, I always put God first. When I got to speak to somebody, they know, don't bother me. Don't ask me when we're leaving. Just go sit in a car or whatever it is, because I don't know how long I'm going to be, but you're just going to have to wait. And they've learned that. So,
yeah,
you know, which is good that they've seen that.
So I want to hear some more lessons from the wandering prophet in just a moment. But you said something earlier that I don't want to neglect to ask a question about. You said that in the past, you had some negative experiences with the prophetic, and you were not too happy that God was using you this way. Can we talk about that a little bit? Like, I want to help people understand about the prophetic and what that means for today, because I think a lot of it's just misunderstood, and I like your practical approach to things, and I think that'll be a good way to kind of bring healing maybe to some things that have maybe been misspoken or gone awry, and then how God has redeemed it in your life.
Okay, well, actually, in the first book, we detailed it. Because when Charisma approached us to write the first book, I said, I'm going to put the good and the bad, and they said, fine. So basically what happened was we went to a church in the city, a prophetic church, and every now and then we would get these words that you kind of don't understand, so I'm not one to always toss it away. I'm just like, well, we'll see. So, you know, you would basically, you know, they used to type them out, we would put them in a binder and just see what happens type of thing. So my wife became pregnant with our fourth child, and, you know, she must have been, I guess, around 3 months, 3.5 months, something like that. So they call us up to the altar, and the pastor starts praying for us. And the pastor gives us this word about this baby. This baby's going to be this. This baby's going to be that. And da-da-da-da. And, you know, so, which sounded great. Then the prophet of the house, because there was a prophet of the house, he came up and he basically reassured that and kind of added on. And we were like, oh, okay. So there was no issue with that. Now, the way I think is very absolute, black and white type of thing. So, you know, I firmly believe God spoke through them and there was no issue. So we came home and then A few days later, this was probably around a few days later, my wife started to get cramps, which is never good if you're pregnant. So no. Then she started to bleed. And all the time, she's like, honey, something's wrong. And I went, we've had three children, no issues. You know, pastor said it, the prophet of the house said it, it's going to be fine. It's totally out of my radar that anything could ever possibly go wrong.
Right.
That's how much faith I had in everything. And then it just continued. And then she lost the baby. And I was devastated. I felt numb. I felt like somebody had pulled the rug out from me. And I couldn't make sense of it all. First, I was very upset because I was like, Lord, I'll do anything you wanted me to do. And I always do. And I err on the side of caution that I'd rather do it than not do it. How could you let this happen to me? So first, I had to kind of reconcile that. Then I had to reconcile, like, wait a minute. These people said this and this and this, and it all just, it's not true. So then I got confused, hurt, frustrated, and finally I said, you know what? I don't know what to make of this, but all I know is something is severely wrong. So I went from, like, going to church to us not going to church anymore. That's how badly I was hurt.
Wow.
And I was upset at God that God allowed this to happen. And so I was very upset, angry. And so we didn't pray for a year. We didn't go to church for a year. It was kind of like I shut the door on God, turned the other way, and said, I don't understand, but I don't want anything to do with you or any of this stuff. So, you know, we're going out to eat on Sunday mornings, you know, what non-believers do and stuff like that. And then slowly the Lord brought me back after a year that he softened my heart and kind of brought us back into it. But that was a year of, you know, something's wrong. You know, something's missing out of your life. But I was just so angry. I just said, I don't want any part of it. I don't understand it. So, you know, when we started to go back to church, we went to a church and they used to have people come in and the prophecy people would come in and they would point to everybody. And I'm sitting there thinking, don't point at me. I don't want to see your finger. I don't want to see nothing. Just, you know, because I'm going to say no, that type of thing. And they would literally skip over me. They would minister to my wife. They wouldn't minister to me because I took it a lot harder. So, and slowly over time, years, then it turned into, well, why aren't they calling me out? They're going this person, and they'd skip over me and they continue down the line. Then you start to think something's wrong with you. And then that started to happen. And then, you know, one time a lady, I forgot her name, they called her a prophetess. She saw me in the very back, so I always stayed in the back. Because most of the prophecy people usually stay in the front, so always stayed in the back. And she pointed at me, and she goes, you. And so I was like, who, me? You know, I'm looking around, and she's like, no, just stay there. And she goes, she points to my chest. She's like, you know, your chest, right there. She goes, there's greatness in you. And I didn't know what that meant. And I went, okay, well, I didn't have to go up to the front and I can just deal with that, whatever. I just kind of brushed it off. But then following that, the next couple of years, it must have happened at least maybe 6 or 7 times that different various prophetic people would come into the church and they would all point to my chest and say, you know, there's greatness in you, which I figured, well, you know, I went very basic in children's church. Jesus lives in my heart. He's great. That must be what they're talking about. Sure, I had no clue really what it was. And then slowly over time, I started to soften my heart to allow more of this stuff to come into my life. So being that I was hurt so much, I never, ever wanted to be put in that position because I know what I went through.
Right.
So it took a long time for the Lord to heal me of that. You know, when I found out what I was doing was prophetic, because I thought you had to be trained, I thought you had to be ordained and all of this, and I wasn't, I didn't want to do it at all. I remember very clearly when somebody had told me, you know, you're a prophet, and I say, well, I'm an accountant, you know, we do profit loss type of thing. I would make a joke out of it. But when I really found out it was prophetic, you know, ministry I was doing, I got really scared. And then I was like, I don't want to do this. But I made a deal with God that I would do whatever he wants, but why would he want me to do this? I don't want to do this. I don't, you know, it's out of my comfort, all these questions. And then I finally just had to come to terms with, if this is what God has for me, then I would rather please him than to deal with my issues. And that's how I, you know, stepped forward. But It was a very scary time when I went through that.
Yeah. So how did you become more comfortable using that gift that way?
I'm still not, to be honest. That was why I asked him that I really need to know it's you. Because I don't want to hurt. I could hurt myself, but I don't want to hurt anybody else.
Sure.
Then the first time it happened, I was at a Cracker Barrel. I got sick. I weeded out that it wasn't the food.
It
wasn't because of the food. And then that's what it turned out to be. That was my signal. And that's been consistent. I won't step out until I get sick.
Right.
Even if I, you know, probably at this point, I could probably just start picking off people. I won't do it. Number one, I wait for him. I don't want to do anything out of my own flesh. Number two, if I'm not 100% confident that it is him, I don't want to do it. So until I get sick every single time, and it only happens the first time, you know, after I get sick the first time and that person gets highlighted, then I get sick, then I'm like, okay, I'm fine. Then he starts highlighting other people, I can keep going. But it's the first time for me to get started that really kind of, it makes me at comfort in one way, but discomfort another way.
Sure. So, you know, Jacob had a limp, Paul had a thorn in his side, and Hubie has crazy butterflies in his stomach, or upset
Jeremiah cried.
Yeah,
Ezekiel was blood boiled, you know. could be worse, I guess.
Yeah, it could be worse. Yeah. Could be worse. So how is God using you now? That's an interesting thing. You've written two books now, but you're an accountant. You haven't turned this gift of God into a full-time ministry. I mean, good luck getting a hold of you in, you know, April leading up to tax season. I kind of know, just like send Hubie a text that I'm praying for him during this season. And then I know that maybe we'll connect after tax season's over. But like, how do you balance your work, life, ministry, family? What does life look like for you?
It's very busy, but I have learned I got to have a certain priority, meaning if God wants me to speak to somebody, like yesterday, I used to go to this church in Manhattan, which I told you 14 years, and there was a woman, I don't think she would have an issue saying her name is Darka. And so we were just kind of just, she saw me, I guess, somewhere on TV or something, or heard of me. And so she Instagrammed me. We hadn't spoken in about 20 years, maybe. So she starts texting, and I've been texting her through, you know, social media. And then she said she was praying 2 days ago, and she felt that the Lord told her to call me or to speak to me because he had, you know, so I was like, okay, well, I'll put it off till like Thursday, Friday, you know, that type of thing, because I can't drop everything now. And then she sent me a text yesterday morning, I'm available at 2:30, and I'm sitting there thinking, okay, well, that's good for her. I have appointments the whole day, and I'm eating lunch probably around 1, and the Lord's like, you need to clear your schedule. And I went, nah, I'm too busy. I need to, you know, I things work in a certain order in accounting. You definitely don't want to start changing appointments.
Right.
So I'm eating, you know, and it's food I cook, so there's no issue. I start to get, you know, rumbles. And I was like, oh, okay. So she texts me. She actually called me at 2 o'clock, which was early. And I'm looking at the phone, and my stomach is just kind of, and I was like, no, I'm not, Lord, I got things to take care of. So I just turned the phone over as I was eating, and then it just starts to kind of bubble up. And I was like, okay, I'll call her. So I texted her. I said, look, I'll call you at 2:30. And so I called her at 2:30. We spent a long time. We must have spent a couple hours on the phone, actually.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. And but I had to email people saying, look, I need to change my schedule. I can't get to it today, this or that. And so I had to rearrange my whole schedule just to speak to this woman. Now, I haven't spoken to her in a very long time, but she was so important to God that he made sure that he kind of met her where she was. So if I really want to serve God, I have to put his needs above mine. So I had to do that yesterday. So that still happens. And so ministry, what does it look like? I mean, I get a lot of invites for places, which I'm not complaining. I pray about every single one of them. And when I pray about it, God gives me the green light. And then I call them up and say, okay, well, we need to work out a date type of thing. But I'm doing it around deadlines and things like that. So, you know, but it's very busy because, you know, I take care of my family. I'm the person that cooks around the house, takes the kids to school because I love that. You know, I do my work at night or in between. And that's fine. So then you throw ministry in there. It's like, okay, well, I got a full-time job, technically. Taking care of the kids and the family, that's also another full-time job, or let's say half. And then you throw ministry on top of that, which could be a full-time ministry. There's all of these things. And one of the major questions I get asked is, when are you going full-time in ministry? And I'm like, well, I don't really have the ambition to do it, first of all. Second of all, it's God's gift, not mine. So I don't want to be in a place where I have to do something. You know, I have plenty of accounting work. If God wants me to go minister, he'll make the way. I don't want to make it that way. That is how I make my living. People make a living that way, and that's great. But for me, I don't want to be pressured in any way for my gift to be used because I have to make a living. At least that's the way I process. I don't know where it goes. The phones just ring. I mean, you were there last year when I went to Charisma. That meeting turned into the book because of the meetings there. So it wasn't anything that I went and said, hey, I got a book I want to write. They started asking me questions. And then, you know, I did that podcast with Steve Strang. And then he saw the downloads and he calls me up and says, hey, you got to, you should really do something. And so that's kind of it. But I don't really do anything. I just live my life. It's God's gift. He makes room for it, which scripture says. And that's all I really do. So I just want to be available when he wants me to use it. And I just want to bless people when he tells me to do it. That's all. I think because of that, it just keeps growing. Like the first book came out 7 years ago. I never knew I would write one book. And the chapter that came out of there that everybody really attached themselves to was the false prophecies and the hurt we went through. And a lot of the healing that a lot of people had from reading that, because they said, if you could stay out of church a year and get back and look what God has done with you, then I guess I don't really have an excuse, because if it could happen to you, it could happen to anybody. And I went, yeah, that's true. So, and then the second book, the chapter that seems to stand out is, you know, I had relationship problems with my son and with a close friend and not giving up on them, and God making those relationships very solid now when it looked like there was no way that was ever going to happen. So there's all of these things. So I don't really do anything. God just makes room. There's no timetable on what I want to do with this. So I'm just trying to be available.
And you just wait for a bellyache to make sure that it's him.
That's true. But, you know, I would encourage anybody who's listening that if you really want to be used by God, because we all have identity issues. A lot of people always want to say, well, how do I know what I'm made to do? I'm just like, well, you know, you just need to pray. And some people, they're very gifted, but they're like, well, I got to do something. And I'm like, I don't do anything. I just live my life. I'm Hubie. When the gift, you know, when God tells me to use the gift, it's his, then I use it. I don't use the gift to tell people who I am. I don't use it to further my career or anything else. I'm just living life, and it happens to pop up. And it seems it works for me. So,
So Hubie, if you could look back at your life, and just like the disciples on the road to Emmaus, you know, that's what this whole podcast is about, is finding those moments where Jesus really was walking with us. But just like the disciples, we weren't aware at that moment until they sit down at the table. Jesus blesses the food and breaks the bread. Their eyes are opened, and then poof, he's gone. And my theme verse for this podcast is Luke 24:32. And they turned to each other and said, weren't our hearts burning within us along the way as he was revealing the scriptures to us? So Hubie, looking back at your life, where do you now realize that your heart was burning, or rather your tummy was churning, that you didn't realize at the moment, but you look back and you see it now, that Jesus really was there?
I think when I go back to the beginning, when I was a young kid, having to take care of my siblings or there would be repercussions, that kind of was really the beginning of the turning point that started me on this road of, you know, helping people, serving people, having patience, and then even being put in the children's ministry, because that's all I could really do. That was all his way of kind of molding me and shaping me to be the minister that I am today. And just being open, because, you know, when you're with kids, you got to be open to anything, because at any time, something can happen. Like, you'll find out when you have kids, you know, you're ready to go somewhere and you have a schedule, and all of a sudden something happens, the baby throws up or something like that. Well, so much for being on time. You will be the most person that's always last through the door or something like that, because that's the way it is, which we learned. So I've learned just kind of when looking back along the way, you know, my mom did the best she could. My mother had a fifth grade education, but she tried to teach us the most important thing to her, which was scripture. Mm. She took everything face value, which was great. So she taught me a lot about that. And I didn't really understand what she was trying to teach me at the time. And if I look back, I really see how she was really being very sincere. And she really placed a lot of faith in the Bible, which it still, when I look back and I think of certain things, it still astonishes me. And I think that as I kind of learned from her, you know, she always took God's word as like face value. And that was something that I've learned from her. So I'll take it at face value, but then I'll also dig deeper. I'll dig down. And I think that she taught me the values that I needed to have. And as I, you know, the values in church that you need to have, there's a certain way that she would read scripture. Like I have one of her Bibles, which I hold very dear. It's got markers all over the place. It has this little pinwheel that has these little scriptures in it and says, oh, for stress, it's all of these scriptures and all of this. Her answer was always in the Bible. So I think, you know, looking back, that had a major effect on me because I read the Bible, you know, to find answers when I'm looking, because everything is really there. It's just you need to search for it. And I think that coupled with the fact that I had to take care of my siblings and then the children's church, those were all stepping stones to, you know, changing the way that I look at things and changing the way I view things and also changing my priorities to do what he wants.
Yeah. Wow. So my follow-up question to that is, if you could go back in time and visit a younger version of yourself somewhere along your timeline, what advice would you give yourself and what's going on in your life at that time that you would want to receive that advice?
I think when I was a teenager, you know, because we're all kind of trying to figure out life at that time, I took it as I was always being punished to stay home and take care of the kids. So I didn't have a chance to grow up. So I think that I would probably go back to myself and just say, you know, kind of like Romans 8:28, you know, all things work together for the glory of God. I think that I would just tell myself, you're not being punished. You're actually being trained for something later in life, but it starts here. You know, a lot of my friends got in trouble. You know, they were always doing things that, you know, exploring, for lack of a better word. I was never that person for a long time because I had to stay home and take care of the kids type of thing. So I think I would, I would place a lot of emphasis on the fact that, yes, you can't go do what all your friends are doing, but God has a certain plan and you're being prepared for it, even as you're a young child, that as you're going along. So now I look back at my childhood and many different aspects of, yeah, I didn't get to do what I really wanted to do. I didn't get to do what was popular. I didn't get to do all these things. And I always looked at it as a very negative. But now I've actually looked at it as a positive because it was teaching me traits that I was learning back then that have become part of me that were needed really in what I do today. So that's the advice I would give myself.
Do you think that younger version of yourself would receive that advice? Do you think you'd listen?
Probably not. But at least the idea would be there. You know, maybe I would come to terms with it a lot quicker than I actually did. So,
So we've talked about David Tyree and Jonathan Cahn and some other people that you've met along your way as a wandering prophet. Can you talk about some maybe other opportunities that God has opened up because of just the connections that you have?
Well, all the connections have actually come from him. One of them was a American Idol person named Scotty McCreery. He was he's a country singer now. I was backstage and the Lord told me to go knock on this door. So, you know, I knew he was in there, but I didn't know who he was. And I'm not really a country guy. I'm more like a classic rock guy. So I went and knocked on the door and, you know, because the Lord's telling me, leading me, and I'm backstage, and I'm like, I really don't want to do this. So I knock on the door.
Wait. How are you backstage already?
Okay. my friend, he did amps.
Yeah.
And he did these amps, and with these amps, he taught me how to, I guess, create certain tones with them. So one of these guys, a country western guy named Brad Paisley, bought one. So he was talking about how great it was on Twitter, and my friend's like, you should reply to him, you should reply to him. So I replied and just said, I can make it sound better.
Whoa, that's kind of bold.
Right, it's kind of bold, but I don't know. It didn't matter to me. And then he replied, do tell.
Okay.
And the next thing I know, he follows me. So he goes, well, how?
Brad Paisley follows you. Okay.
Just from that one comment. And then he said, well, what can you do? And I said, well, the person who built that amp, he was my best friend. Mm-hmm. And because he had passed. And I said, well, he showed me things and I can do it to you, blah, blah, blah. So he's like, well, look, I'm coming to town. And when I come to town, DM me. And then, you know, I'd love to meet you. So I'm like, okay. So he comes to town. You know, I DM him. I go to the gate. He tells me, go to the gate, call this person, go to the gate. I went to the gate and it was during sound check. And then, you know, I walk on stage, they're doing a sound check, and he comes out and he goes, hi, I'm Brad Paisley. And I went, okay, I don't. So he goes, here's the amp. So I said, oh, okay, well, this. So I just switched something and he started playing. And all of a sudden, I mean, he really started playing. He started really digging in and he's like, wow. You know, and he was just like so taken back by I just did one simple adjustment to it and it changed everything. So then we, you know, we started, anytime he came to town, he would invite me over and I'd come and just kind of work on his gear and stuff like that. So, you know, he's a great guy, by the way. Mm-hmm. And then he was touring with Scotty. So that's how Scotty was on the undercard as far as the warm-up band. So that's how I got it. So, you know, there was a lot of hesitation to go knock on Scotty McCreery's door because, you know, Brad gave me all access backstage and I don't want to go and abuse that privilege and I don't want to create any issues type of. So I knock on the door and his mother answers and she goes, hi, come on in. And I went, okay. And my wife Vicky's behind me, you know, she's staring from across the room and she sees me go in and shuts the door and she's like, oh my gosh. So I go in there, his sister's there, his dad is there, he's there. And so I sit down and they're just like, so how you doing? And it's just like, I just got invited to their home or something. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm okay, yourself. How you doing? And so meanwhile, I don't know any of the guy's music. I just saw him on TV a couple of times. So, so I said, you know, I knocked on your door because basically God led me to knock on your door. And they were like, oh, okay. So then I said, yeah, I got something to tell you. So they're like, okay. So I spoke to you know, I ministered to all of them. Mm-hmm. And then him and his sister and the family. And then, you know, they smiled a lot. So I was like, okay. So I was like, well, it's great meeting you. Great meeting you. I went out and shut the door and that was that. So when I wrote the first book, I was like, well, I only met the guy once. I don't want to make it appear like I'm using his name for something.
Right, right.
So I didn't put his name in it. I just wrote about the experience in the first book. Mm-hmm. So probably a couple of years later, I had found his mother on Facebook, so I added her and she added me. And so she sent me an email and she goes, you know, I bought your book and we were all laughing because you put us in the book and you didn't tell us about it. She goes, I know it was us. And I went, you know, she goes, you could have put us in it. It would have been fine. And I was like, I just met you, that type of thing. So,
right.
You know, so then Scotty, a couple years later after that, Scotty was writing an autobiography. Mm. And so they contacted me and they wanted to put me in the book and use my name, which was kind of funny. So I was like, okay. So, you know, that turned into, you know, just the exposure to different people that the name of what God, or actually what God did, is just, it still keeps moving forward. I still keep in touch with, you know, his mother. Another thing was I met a woman named Kathy Lee Gifford.
I think I've heard of her. Yeah, she's kind of a big deal.
I think you've heard of her.
Yeah.
Yes. So I've become really good friends with her, basically through a text, because I met some people who found me on the internet, an interview, and they are the people that write the books, the God Wink series. Mm-hmm. So they contacted me for an interview. They put me in one of their books, and they're very good friends with Kathy Lee Gifford. And then I had to send a word to Kathy, but I don't want to appear like I was using them just to get to her type of thing. So, which I don't really like that. And then, you know, the way Squire, because it's Squire and Louise that write these books. So Squire goes, you know, he talks like this. Well, it so happens we're having lunch with her. And I was like, oh, I'm being set up here type of thing. So I text him what I had to say, and, you know, he gave it to Kathy, and Kathy got emotional about it, and she wanted to meet me. And so that kind of turned into that. So it's literally God just highlights people to me, and I just do what I do, and that's it. So I'm not really doing anything. I just kind of sit back and kick my heels. Like, there's a man named Dan Correa. He's a good friend of mine. He has a local church here. We were having lunch, and he goes, you know, you do absolutely nothing except what God tells you to do, and it's amazing to see what God does with you. He goes, I've never seen anything like it, because I don't go knocking on doors. I don't do anything. The next thing you know, somebody's talking about me. Mm. Or, you know, I only know because people start texting me, hey, such and such is talking about you, or whatever it is. So that seems to happen a lot. And it kind of comes in spurts type of thing. So I'm like, well, if they're talking about what God did, I'm more for it. And, you know, because I'm really a nobody compared to everybody else. So, you know, if they're talking about what God did, that's great. I can deal with that. And it just keeps happening. It's not like there's a frequency that it happens, but it just always seems to happen at certain intervals, you know, whenever God does it. So, you know, it's not something that happens all the time.
Right.
But it seems to happen dramatically when it does.
One of the things that I've, you know, by doing this podcast, I've interviewed a lot of people, and one of the different phrases that people have said have been life-changing in a lot of different ways. And one of those is, you know, I'm nothing special. I'm just available and obedient. And Doug Stringer told me that. And you walk in that same anointing. You're just available and obedient. You know, you make room for whenever God says to do something, and you're obedient to listen to his voice and then to do what he says. And, you know, you give God the margin to be able to do that. And I find that amazing how you've been able to be consistently obedient with that. That's a very inspirational for me, because there's a lot of times where I doubt whether I heard God. And then by my doubt, it's led to me feeling like, man, I think that doubt caused disobedience because I didn't act like I needed to. So maybe I need to ask God to give me an upset stomach every once in a while. So I don't know. What do you think?
Well, let's analyze that, because that's what accountants do, okay?
Okay.
So when you say that you feel God wants you to do, but you have doubt, okay, that doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. Now, you have a choice when that happens. Now, when I first started doing my stuff, that happened all the time. So the way that I kind of laid everything out was, the risk, because we think of everything in numbers, okay? Mm-hmm. The risk of me doing this and being wrong is very high, because we always think the worst case scenario. And the risk equals reward is very small in this thing, okay? Mm-hmm. And the way I looked at it is, if I got to walk up to a stranger and tell them something and it's wrong, it's going to make me feel bad. My ego, my insecurities are going to be flying high. They're going to look at me in a funny way. I'm going to feel stupid. I'm going to, all these things, right? But they're all my feelings. Mm-hmm. So the way I would look at it is, say, if it's God, then I have to trust him. I'm just going to do it. Mm-hmm. Because what are the odds I'm going to see this person again? Right?
Yeah.
Or if I walk up to him and it goes bad, how am I going to really look at that? If it goes bad, I'm going to look like an idiot. Okay, but you can't say I didn't try. Mm-hmm. So I said, I'd rather try and fail than skip an opportunity that God has for me.
Right.
Because if God wants you to do something, then it has to do with the person, but it also has to do with you and your personal growth. Mm-hmm. So I would rather say, okay, well, let me try it. If I fail, okay, nobody's perfect, but I'm going to try to do it rather than not. And the way he taught me that was, we used to, when we went to this church, we were learning about tithing, you know, because accountants are very tight with money. We look at it a certain way.
Right.
I used to walk in the church, be very cynical. I'd look at the speaker system. I would look at the chairs. I'd look at the people. In my head, I was trying to figure out numbers. I'd see the kind of car the pastor drives. I'd see where the pastor lives. All these things is what I used to do. So it got to the point when it was very difficult for me when I first got there to just give 10%. Which is only the fee to get in, okay? That doesn't count offerings and everything else. Tithing is just, that's just a, you know, it's kind of like you make it into heaven by the skin of your teeth. That's all that really is. So I had to really go through situations where I would give my wife a blank check and I would say, put whatever. And I would sit here and just, oh, God, you know how much money we have in the bank account. And then just kind of, you know, which took faith. And she would write out the checks and I'd be like, I hope we don't go overdrawn. I'd be thinking all these negative things. And that's how God broke me to just risk it all.
Wow.
And it was very trying for a while. Just number one, trusting my wife to write whatever she felt. But for me to sit there and just give everything to her and just say, well, I have no control over it. And but the checks never bounced. There were times when was different amounts, yes. But it also taught my wife, because it was bringing her along with me instead of just me dealing with it. So, because I handle all the finances. So that taught me, okay, well, I'm going to do what God wants me to do. And then I'll just settle for, if something happens, I'll just deal with it. And that's really how my gift really started to grow was I'll try anything once. Like, and like when I was walking, when I wasn't walking with God, I'd be like, I'd try anything once if it doesn't kill me, you know, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, okay, well, I'll try it. And then, you know, we'll just kind of go from there. And he's never let me down. Because if you're really trying to serve God, I don't think that he would let you down that way. Mm-hmm. Now, that's just my personal opinion.
That's
if you're doing
stuff.
It for the right reasons, Andy. then God isn't really going to set you up to fail. He's not. I find that very difficult to believe.
Right. That's a great lesson from a wandering prophet. And I'm sure that there's a lot more like that in the book. And I want to encourage everybody to check that book out. It's a new release from Charisma, and as well as the Tales of a Wandering Prophet. It's a little bit older, and you can get more information about Hubie at pursuehimministries.com. And so I just want to brag on Hubie a little bit more before we wrap up here. But the first time that Hubie and I met, he was a guest on the TV program Real Life. And after the program was over, he did something that I've never seen a guest do. He literally stayed around and God used him to speak and deliver words to pretty much everybody that was within eyeshot of or line of sight from him. And including, as I thought we were all done for the day. And then the director comes down from his director's booth and he's fixing a light in the studio somewhere. And Hubie and I walk by and there's Larry over there. And Hubie looks at me and asks, can I go give him a word? God has something he wants to say. And so I just appreciate the humility that he walks in. And then he went and gave a word to somebody that is not looking for prophetic words. You know, he's not seeking those out, but he's grateful to receive them whenever, you know, they come. And I just was blown away by just how you operate. And then, you know, the rest of that day, Hubie and I went, we had lunch. We had to take him back to the airport, but we had lunch. We went up to Mount Washington overlooking the city of Pittsburgh. We had ice cream. We had great, great conversation. And God has just kind of knit us together as friends. And so, Hubie, I just got to say, I am so grateful that you've allowed me to join you along your way.
Well, I also am glad I met you personally. Just so you know that when everything started to happen with, I guess, what God was moving me to, and I started to go to all these shows, God specifically told me that's the only thing really to get me there, but I have work to do when I go there. So just be open to it. So being invited to be a guest is great, but it's more like, okay, you're there to work type of thing. Yeah. As far as you, if I can brag on you a little, you know, I have seen you from the time we first met to today, I have seen you grow leaps and bounds. And there were decisions that you made recently that you may not have been totally confident in doing, but, you know, you're seeing the fruit of it. Mm-hmm. And that's really walking out on the ledge, just like I do. So congrats to you. You know, it's scary when you're doing it. But now that you're looking back, you're like, oh, yeah, that was really a good decision. So I'm really happy for you that things are moving forward. That's great. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Thank you. Well, it's a pleasure to have you on this podcast and to hear about your along the way journey.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Thank you for listening to Along the Way.
If you've enjoyed joining me along my way, please share this with a friend who you think will be encouraged by this podcast. Also, please rate and review Along the Way on iTunes. That helps more people discover Along the Way. And subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening. You can follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and at my website, alongtheway.media. I hope that you've enjoyed this part of my journey, and may you realize when Jesus is walking with you, along your way. Along the Way is honored to be part of the Charisma Podcast Network. You can find tons of Spirit-filled content from their vast catalog of podcasts, including my news stories with the Charisma News Podcast. Go to cpnshows.com to see the full list and latest episodes.